Season 5, Episode 12, A Box of Wendy. It starts out with Medavoy, Russell, Simone, and Sipowicz going to a DOA that's in a wooden box. A gentleman walking by wanted to take the box because he was just smitten with its handiwork. A guy named Ed Peterson. But he started to notice some liquid oozing out of the bottom, and it was too heavy, and he called the authorities. When they opened it up, there was a dead woman inside. He's, of course, talking way too much and freaking out, and they're just trying to get the information out of him.
What is he freaking out about, though?
I think he thinks that he'll be connected with this, even though he won't be. Like, any logical person would just be like, well, obviously I have nothing to do with this, so I'll just let him know and then get out of here.
I was just trying to get a free box.
Yeah, and Medavoy shows up and says, oh, there's two dudes across the street that we really should talk to. And when they go across the street, there's a guy named Clyde Jones and Marco Inez. And they were talking about how they found the box and the trash last week. And they put it in their basement because they were going to take it home. And then when they tried to get it, it was really, really heavy and stunk. So they just put it out by the trash.
Yeah.
And Medavoy, being, you know, the funny guy, he goes, who was going to actually get the box when you guys, you know, decided to take it? And he said, again, I guess eventually that would be a bone of contention. Which I was like, those two dudes wouldn't say something like that. They're not smart.
No, enough. Not at all. Like, for a second, I was, like, super... I actually was like, oh, wow, Medavoy asked, like, a pretty interesting question, you know? Like, who was gonna get the box? And then he, like, had to go fuck it up and be old and talk like he's in the 1940s.
Well, Medavoy isn't the one that said that. That was the dudes. One of the dudes said it.
Really?
Yeah. It was, I know it was supposed to be the dudes because it was 80-yard... when the camera was on Medavoy walking away. I think the original scene had them just look at each other, and I guess they were just like, that's not good enough. So then it cuts to Medavoy, and then you hear, I guess that would have been a bone of contention as Medavoy was walking away, but he didn't say it.
Okay. Never mind, take it back. Medavoy's fine in this one.
The only thing you need to know about the body is they mentioned that she had nice clothing, but there was no ID, so they couldn't figure out who it was. And now we have the theme song, and this is NYPD Blue Balls.
What does nice clothing have to do with anything?
Just so that they have something to go on, because there's no other identifying thing.
But anyone could have nice clothing.
Yeah, but it just helps out with identifying her if they don't have an ID that... Okay, well, she was wearing nicer clothing because, I mean, it helps out later with identifying who she is.
Alright, I mean, I get what you're saying.
It's just, they're just highlighting the only things they know about the DOA, for sure. Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. When we come back from the break, Russell's coming out of the bathroom with some of that morning sickness, and Kirkendall basically just catches it.
Yeah, Kirkendall catches it right away.
She sees it and goes, yep, that bitch pregnant.
No hesitation, no surrender. Galaxy Quest.
Great reference. We got three cases. And I think it really clutters up the episode and kind of brings it down.
Not at all. I think you're totally wrong. There's one case that matters.
Well, I don't know. I feel like one of them would have been...
there's one performance that matters throughout the whole show.
Okay. I don't know who that is. Oh, you're talking about the guy. Well, let's talk about him first, because it's the only interesting one, in my opinion.
The only interesting one.
So, when they come back to the house... after Russell clearly has morning sickness, they're running it down for Fancy, and they say the woman was strangled and bludgeoned and boarded up in a box, and no less than 10 people wanted to make out for the box before someone reported it.
Okay, can we, real quick, before we get into this, like, that was just a normal-ass box, right? Like,
I didn't see anything crazy about it.
Like, they kept talking about the craftsmanship. Like, did Jesus make this box?
It's the box of Turin.
Or was this, like, a Joseph original or something? Like,
a Joseph original.
Like, am I missing, like, what after, this fucking box is? Like,
after it had the Joseph brand, it ain't my kid, it's God's, on the side. I don't know. I didn't notice anything crazy about the box. It just looked like a normal-ass box. As they're going over the dead woman in a box, they mention that she has no ID, but she had fancy clothes with Goodwill tags on them, which is weird, because I don't know why you would keep Goodwill tags on your clothes.
Sometimes there's like a little white little thing that they put in it. It's like a little white piece of paper, and you don't really notice it right away, and you don't take it off sometimes.
But as they're going over it with that, Medavoy peeks his head in and says, "Hey, I got a name for your case. Fox in a Box." And yeah. Sipowicz responds with catchy. I just wanted to mention, this is the second time in a row, two episodes in a row, where Medavoy comments on the attractiveness of a DOA.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Apparently he's been alone for a while. He's thinking DOAs are hot. Well, now that his lesbian's gone.
Yeah, straight up disappeared. He, like, straight up got that baby, got that girl out of there, and was like, donezo.
The next break in their case, Tim Jones shows up, which is a feminine man. I think you could say that. He kind of has a very effeminate New York accent. Coming in to report that his best friend is missing. Says that she keeps to a schedule and talks to him every day, but something has happened because she hasn't spoken to him in a week. Her name is Wendy Schatze. Simone says they can't take a missing persons report from any non-family member. And Sipowicz, who's hearing all this, just out of curiosity, says, "What? Where does she buy her clothes?" And she's like, well, she's a Goodwill shopper, or a secondhand shopper. And so they're like, well, could you take a look at this picture for us? And he starts freaking out, and Sipowicz takes the reins of the whole situation by saying, like, basically, just take a look at the photo, Tim.
Yeah, sometimes, though, dude, sometimes people just need to be told to, like, fucking chill and look at it, you know?
And just get to it. He starts sobbing once he sees it and asks, why did you make me look at that? I told you it was going to be her. And they said, do you have any idea who could have done this? And he said, her beady-eyed brother, Willie. Apparently, he's been soaking up on the trust fund because she was taking care of her invalid mother and invalid aunt, who apparently are rich folk.
Yeah, she's traveling back and forth from fucking Florida and New York all week.
To take care of both of them. I guess, he also, like, this guy gives a lot of exposition super fast. Where he says,
which that means she doesn't have a job, obviously.
Well, apparently she used to be an actress and had her own money.
Okay. That's right. He does mention that. And that's probably how they know each other.
What are you saying, Kyle? Are you saying that possibly gay men are very tied with the acting and arts community in New York City?
Just a little.
Just a wee bit. I mean, the real comedy in this scene, while Tim is just dumping exposition that the aunt was, like, giving away priceless art to people and realizing that her mind is going, so she was going to give Wendy power of attorney.
Yeah, but who cares? It's her shit.
What do you mean, who cares? It's her shit.
Like, what if she just wanted to start giving away her stuff? Who cares? It's hers.
Well, it's one of those. I think the Picasso one is because it was like a family heirloom, I guess.
Nah, that's worth a lot of money, shit. And if we ever need to sell it, it's ours to make money, not someone else.
Basically. And she also said that Tim said that once they talked, she realized, like, oh man, I might give up the whole farm. I better make you power of attorney. And Tim was saying Willie was going to get pissed off because Wendy planned on cutting Willie off, who doesn't work and just sucks off the trust fund.
Willie, what a name. Willie.
Willie! And Tim is adamant
I'll give you $100 a week if you start calling Dad Willie.
$100 a week?
Yeah.
I mean, I might take that action.
Every day, though.
Every day? I can call him Willie every day.
With everything. After every, like, hey, Willie, where's the cheese?
Kyle,
for... Hey, Willie, what's happening? What's on the TV, Willie? Like, everything.
Kyle, if you give me $100, I'll call him Big Willie style.
Gross. No need for that.
Because we're all big fans of Will Smith here. The comedy in this scene is that Tim keeps, like, sobbing onto Sipowicz, and he's not having it, because he hates being touched by gay people, I guess.
Yeah, there's this, yeah, because you're going to transfer it, you know.
Because he, like, sobs onto his knee, and then he, like, looks at him. He, like, puts his hand on him, and Sipowicz is, like, clearly uncomfortable.
But you would think that after so many... dealing with so many people, right? Sipowicz has probably dealt with tons of gay people in his life. They've touched him. Tons of, like, trans. Tons of people. And he still, like, doesn't get that, like, you can be touched by them and nothing will happen.
I think it's just he's so uncomfortable with it that, like... I don't think he thinks he's gonna turn gay. I think he's just uncomfortable with the lifestyle and doesn't really want to... He also doesn't seem like a guy that wants to be touched by anyone.
Not true.
So they go to pick up Willie, because he lives with the mother, and they got the address from Tim. And while they get out of the elevator, Sipowicz, because, you know, he's with the times of 1996, I think this is, or 7, where he looks at Simone and he says, "Do you like this fruit, Tim?" And I was like, what? There's no need for that right now.
Yeah, there was.
And he just basically mentions, do you think
that... Yeah, there was this fruit, Tim. Oh my gosh.
They kind of juggle the idea that maybe he thought... Tim may have thought he would have been in the will or something like that. But then once Willie answers the door, I mean, he's immediately suspicious because of the way he looks.
I think he's amazing.
You think this guy's amazing?
Yeah. Everything about the character, what they've chosen, what he's chosen to do, how he acts. If this, like, whoever wrote this or whoever is behind creating this character was very enjoyable for me.
Because I really liked him. I don't think I would.
I don't know if I would say I liked him. I just thought it was a good character. You normally don't like somebody who, like, is like that.
The guy who plays Willie, Shotzi, is a guy named Sam Whipple, who is a famous face if you know of a little movie that was very important to our lives when we were younger. And I don't know if you remember what it is.
I don't. I'm excited to hear.
Sam Whipple played Larry Henderson in the cinematic classic The Rock with Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage. He was the guy that Ed Harris pulls out of the...
Oh, shit.
And points a gun to his head and says, if you don't bring the navigation chips or you don't bring the guidance chips, I'm going to blow off Larry Henderson's head.
Yeah, because he keeps yelling, what about Mr. Henderson's head?
That's right.
Okay, interesting.
I rewatched it recently just because I needed a little pick-me-up in the middle of my Monday, and it was pretty fucking awesome. Yeah, he played Sam Whip... Or, no, he didn't play Sam Whipple. He played Larry Henderson in The Rock. What's important in NYPD Blue, he comes to the door, and he's immediately kind of dismissive of the police until Sipowicz gets up into his face.
Yeah, don't they say, like, hey, can we come in? He's like, no.
Yeah, he basically starts to close the door, and Sipowicz is like, will you please take the chain off so we can talk to you? And once he does, they asked about his sister, and he goes... She's in Florida. I just got off the phone with her.
Yeah, which they already know is a lie because they know she's dead.
She's also been dead for a week. Like, it's not even like he could have made the mistake because she got killed recently. Like, she's been dead for a while. And so...
Like, there have been two or three discussions about this box already before they found her body.
And none of them reported it, even though it stank like dead body.
Yeah, which is so weird. Well, I mean, no offense, like...
In New York, you don't have time.
Everything in New York City can smell like dead body, especially, like, right now, and it's, like, hot and humid outside. So, like, if they, like, unless, like, someone was, like, putting their nose in that shit, I get it. Like, I get it.
He said, they tell him, Sipowicz and Simone tell him, like, they're gonna have to go to the station house. And he's like, okay, and gets his coat and locks the door, and like, don't you have to have somebody watch your mom? And he goes, ah, she's asleep.
He's like, he's the best. The way he answers everything is fantastic. If I was a cop, it would piss me off to all, and I'd be so frustrated with him.
Because he's a very frustrated character. When they get back to the house, Sipowicz runs down who he is for Fancy. Fancy mentions, it's hard to believe he lives in New York, and Sipowicz responds, yeah, more like he should be in that painting next to his wife with the pitchfork.
I mean, it is weird that he's dressed like he, like, is about to go to work on a farm.
Yeah, he's straight up in farmer gear in New York City. They get him into an interrogation room, and he goes, can I have a Coke? That becomes very important.
It's the best runner of any episode of NYPD. The best running, like, running line, running gag ever.
Yeah, can I have a Coke? And they're like, yeah, maybe in a minute. And they say, by the way, your sister's dead. And he says, nah, she's in Florida. And then they show her the picture, show him the picture, and he just looks at it for a while and goes, ah, Jiminy.
Yeah.
And, like, at this point, I thought maybe this guy is just, like, special, which would explain why he can't help his mom, really, but lives with her.
Okay.
I was like, maybe this guy is special. Because then they said, yeah, she's been dead a while, according to that picture, but you said you were talking to her this morning. And he goes, oh, I must have been mistaken. I just assumed that she's in Florida when she's not here, because she keeps a haphazard schedule, even though her best friend told the detective she keeps a very specific schedule.
Yeah.
And then he just says, I'd like a moment to myself. And Simone says, someone will bring a soda. But, like, to me, I was like, maybe he's just, like, severely autistic and has no idea how to, like, talk to people.
I thought that. I also thought maybe, like, I thought maybe he was just, like, a weirdo. Like, maybe he was somebody who, like, lived in, like, did live in the fucking country and shit. And then somehow got to New York, you know, randomly.
Well, you're trying to get on that game show, Autistic or Weirdo. Because you have a really good way of sussing that out in people. When they come back to Willie, he got a ginger ale when he asks, and he says he would like a Coke. Sipowicz and Simone bring up that they have witnesses saying that they saw him with a big box.
Yeah, like, not even hiding that he's got a, like, not even hiding shit. Like, he was just, like, out in the open with everything.
And he said, crazy. And they're like, we're going to get a warrant to check your place. We're not going to see a sign of a struggle and the fact that you, and then evidence that you boxed her up and then brought her out. And he goes, Detective Sipowicz, that's quite a tale. And Sipowicz responds with, you're the one that dreamed it up. It's like, what I love is his fucking balls to be like, because we know by the end of this episode, definitely he did it. Like, there's no question he did it. And he goes, well, this is a misunderstanding. And when you sort it out, can you bring me a sandwich and a Coke?
Yeah, it still wants that fucking Coke, dude. And I'm not gonna lie, like, sometimes...
You just need a Coca-Cola.
You need a good cold Coke.
It just hits the spot. So they put him in the cage of that interrogation room, which is hilarious, because in the middle of the other investigation where they're doing a lineup, he's just in the cage, like, asking for a soda. When they come back... After investigating his place, because they go to his place, first off, they go there, and Mrs. Shotzi, his mom, is in bed just screaming, I soiled myself.
He has shit the bed, literally.
And I just really wanted to mention, because they ask her questions, and she's like, they fight all the time, they got sibling rivalry, and her mental faculties really aren't there to ask her very specific questions. But then she mentions, oh, Willie's had a hard time. He watched his brother die. And I'm like, I'm wondering, do you remember when you watched this the first time, if you thought, did he also kill his brother?
Oh, immediately. I remember immediately when I watched this one and they said that. I was like, oh, so then he killed his brother as well. Like, the dude's a weirdo.
That's what I thought. And the other thing I thought was, this woman's like, I've soiled myself. I need a bath. And then these two grown men are like, yeah. We got EMS, and we're going to wait till they get here. But it's kind of shitty. It's kind of shitty to just sit in a chair next to her bed and be like, yep, somebody else is going to come take care of that.
You're basically saying you're much more like, you're okay with just sitting next to someone who's, like, in shit.
Like, because I don't know, it's true, there's an idea like, okay, it's not my job, I don't know how I can help this person, but there's another part of it of like, well then don't just sit there.
Yeah.
Like, that seems rude to just be like, someone else is gonna take care of that as soon as they get here.
Yeah, like, get the fuck out of the room or something. I just think it's weird to just have someone tell you they shit themselves, and then you just sit there and go, okay.
Alright, well, you've shit yourself. We called an EMS crew to take care of that, and cool. I'm going to sit here, and because even Simone gives a face that, like, I've seen that face many times in customer service, where it's kind of the, like, well, I guess we'll both wait here
face. Yeah, I guess we're both doing this today.
Like, we're both just going to wait here and see what happens. When they come back to the house, Sipowicz and Simone run down for Fancy that they've got enough to put him away. And Sipowicz says, basically, this guy's been lying, and that's stopping right now. And when they walk into the room, Willie was like, the sandwich was very good, but they brought me a Pepsi. And he's like, I think I made it clear twice what type of beverage I want.
I just, like you said it earlier, it's just the moxie and the balls and the way he's just like, do you think he knows how much they know already?
I honestly think...
Did that question make sense? Like, in all of him acting this, like, badass and shit, do you think he knows how much they actually know?
I think it plays into the end of this investigation, how they get him to confess. I think it plays into his personality. What I think he is doing is, look, if I deny it and I get what I want all the time, eventually they'll just leave me alone. I think him being denied a Coca-Cola is the first time in his life he's ever been denied anything. So he literally cannot handle it.
Well, no, I think the first time he's ever been denied anything is we'll find out.
Because then they go, okay, well, maybe we'll take care of that for you. But we gotta run down a list of things we found in your place. Blood trail by the door. Lumber, hammer and saw, and a day calendar with notes about getting a decision, about setting things up.
And yeah, he's a fucking idiot, dude.
And it's basically a day journal for a guy who plans a murder. And he goes, well, that can't be my calendar. And he's like, oh, so your mom is involved with carpentry too? And then he looks at Simone and is like, somebody must be setting me up. And Simone literally says, Willie, you're caught. How can you deny it?
But Simone, it's funny because Simone's like not mad at him.
He's like, just surprised.
The way Simone comes at him is Simone is like, kind of like, this guy makes him laugh.
Like, I can't believe this dude is,
Well, like, no, it's more of like, the guy is like a fucking lunatic. And the guy, like, did a horrible thing. But he's, like, pretty much, like, a harm... Like, he's not... You're not afraid of him. He's trying to be tough, and he's trying to be this, like... Golly, like, look at me. Look what happened, blah, blah, blah. But, like, he's done... Like, he's an idiot, though, you know?
It's like when you're dealing with, like, a six-year-old, and there's, like, paint on the walls, and then there's paint all over their hands. But they're saying, like, I didn't do it. Somebody's setting me up.
Yeah.
It's just like, come on.
Yeah, or they're, I look at it more as like, that analogy, like, they're clean, but then you go into, like, the bathroom, and underneath all of the dirty clothes are, like, just paint-covered clothes, like, six-year-old clothes. Like, and you're just, like, trying to talk to them about it, and you're like, what's up? And they're like, I don't know how those got there. And you know, it's like, dude, this is you. You're like, yo, Willie, this is your fucking dinosaur t-shirt with red paint all over it. Like, you're the only one that wears Willie's dinosaur t-shirt. Like,
it even like says Willie's.
Like, you're not mad, you're just kind of like, it makes you laugh a little bit. And that's how I feel Simone handled it. Because he's like, Willie, you're caught dead to rights, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, well, I don't know, man.
And then Sipowicz just looks at him and says, we will sit here all night if we have to. But the other thing that...
Go ahead.
The thing that this really reminded me of, his mom is, like, completely helpless, and he hasn't asked about her once. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude. Well, I mean, he doesn't care. It's not about his mom. He doesn't care about his mom.
But, like, just, it proves, like, the kind of person he is, because when they come back, after seeing her without food or anything, they're like, yeah, so your mom's in a bad way. He's like, yeah, she's pretty ill. And it's like... And the point they make is like, and you don't see fit to help her out. And he's like, yeah, Wendy helps her. He's like, yeah, but Wendy's dead, Willie. And he's like, oh yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, he was only trying to get money. Like, that was his main goal for everything.
So they come back to him after giving him some time to think, and he goes, did you bring me a Coke?
Yeah. Still, I mean, he's only asked for one thing since he's been here.
And I think Sipowicz is like, you're wearing my patience. And he's like, what are you going to do, beat me? And he's like, I didn't say it. I didn't say I was, but don't think I won't. And Simone sips down a Diet Coke.
Now, do you think at this point, hold on, do you think at this point they know it's pissing him off?
No.
You don't think so? Okay.
Because I don't think so because of the way they reacted to his response. Because he goes, what's that? And he's like, oh yeah, they were out of regular. And Willie, like, hits the can off the table. And he's like, what, are you kidding me? They're out of regular. Well, first he goes, they're out of regular. And then he screams, what, are you kidding me? I didn't say a diet. I didn't say Pepsi. And then I love how he says this. Or ginger ale. Like, the way he says ginger ale makes me laugh. How many times do I gotta ask for a plain old Coca-Cola, please? And then Simone's like, if we give you one, will you confess? And then, like, the look on his face of like, huh, I really got these cops by the short hairs. All I gotta do is admit to this murder I definitely did, and I can get myself some Coca-Cola. But not just a can of Coca-Cola. He says, would you get me a liter?
You get me a leader.
And then Simone and Sipowicz look at each other. I think if they knew that this was pissing them off that bad, they wouldn't have given each other that look of, like, confusion and surprise.
Fair enough.
And then he goes, I think we can arrange that. And then Willie sits down like he's in a real negotiation, and he goes, you get me 2 liters, I'll tell you about another murder.
I mean, he's nothing short of consistent.
Well, it's also, well, the question is, did this happen to Bill Clark? And he's like, I have to put this into a story.
Yeah, that's what I was also thinking. Like, he had to have dealt with somebody like this, I feel like. There had to have been somebody he arrested or because this is a very specific style.
And he also, what I love about it is, like, you give me 2 liters, I'll tell you about another murder. And then he sits down and crosses his arms like, I won that exchange.
He got 2 liters out of it, dude.
When Simone goes to, like, call it in, it's like, wow, that's amazing. The last scene with Willie is when he's just swigging delicious Coca-Cola and giving a very descriptive explanation of how he killed Wendy. And I think the best moment is when Sipowicz slowly passes the second 2 liter before he starts talking about how he murdered his brother. By drowning him.
By how he drowned his brother.
Yeah, I would say that the actor did a great job. It was very entertaining and very funny and very crazy.
And I think he also worked off of Sipowicz and Simone pretty well, too.
All right, so that's the end of that story.
Yeah, the best story of the whole bunch.
I also want to mention that I kind of wish that they still had 2 liters with that Coca-Cola design, because it was very 90s.
Oh, my God.
But that's neither here nor there.
Neither here nor there, bro.
Russell gets a call out for a seriously injured 6-year-old at Bellevue. She needed a minute before heading out because she was dealing with that morning sickness. Them baby troubles. Russell goes to Bellevue and talks to the doctor, who lets her know that Josh Walker, the 6-year-old, died 10 minutes ago. He had a broken neck from a fall and possible history of abuse. Linda Walker is the mother, and then I just love how the doctor, like, really emphasized the stepdad is here, too.
Like, yeah.
Puts a real underline underneath stepdad.
He did not give that stepdad a chance.
Because I understand, like, I get it, the doctor can't just be like, yeah, the stepdad probably did it. Like, they can't really do that. It's not part of their job. But the way she emphasized stepdad was like, yeah, go after that fucker. It's probably him.
Unless they have, like, run-ins, you know? Unless they've had, like, other run-ins with the father at the hospital, you know? I don't know. But the way, like, he was acting as soon as the police walked in, he was the one talking, he was the one, like, it's also, maybe he was setting off signals that the doctors didn't feel good about.
Well, yeah, I mean, he has one line here, which proves he doesn't give a shit about that kid, so... Russell goes to talk to him, you find out that Linda is preggers. But Linda, like, basically seems super shut off to the entire thing. Which, I was like, maybe it's just the shock of everything, but it turns out it's just because she's not a good mother.
Well, super controversial topic, they basically... At the end, there's this mom talking about how, like, she doesn't like having kids.
Yeah, I thought that was, like, I tried to think of the word to describe it, but that's pretty interesting of a show to do.
I mean, it's a progressive stance because, you know, there are people who have come out and been like, oh, like, we just don't want to have kids. Like, it's just not something we want to do. And in a society like ours, it's weird, but, like, it's interesting then that it was something that was brought up.
And also, it's with a person that, like, just kept having kids because she's pregnant right now. Because, I mean, this story is pretty cut and dry what happens. There's just interesting things that people say. For example, in this scene, they're like, yeah, he tumbled down the stairs at the back of the building. The stepdad, Gary Walker, was the only person to see it. And they're like, yeah, he was always a klutzy kid. Linda didn't see it, though. I was like, okay, suspicious.
Wait, you mean the mother of... her child, the mother of the child, didn't see how her child acted.
Yeah, exactly. And then the stepdad was like, I was trying to get him to go outside. These kids need some fresh air. Russell was like, did he go willingly? He's like, oh, he don't do nothing willingly. And it was like, hey man, if you're trying to get off a possible murder charge of a child, just check what you're saying.
Yeah, like, take a breath.
For example, if you don't want suspicion thrown on you for possibly murdering someone, which you did, you don't want to say things like, he didn't do nothing willingly.
Yeah.
And then the other things that prove that, like, clearly this dude is a fucking asshole. Russell's like, okay, well, we're going to have to take a trip to the house. And he goes, oh, I can't take any more time off. This is already taking time off enough as it is. So it's like, oh yeah, the death of a child. Usually, your work's cool with that.
Yeah, like a good way to show, like, sympathy is to be like, oh yeah, let me see if I can take more time off. No, we're gonna go the opposite way. We're just gonna go full on, fuck you, I don't want to take any more time, this kid sucks.
And then Linda is like, you can take more time off, I'm taking off a lot of time too, it is, like, the death of my son. And he goes, don't take that tone with me. And it's like, yeah, hey, woman beaters around the world. You want to know what phrase lets everybody know that you have a bad relationship with your partner? The phrase, don't take that tone with me. No one's ever said, don't take that tone with me, woman I love and respect and cherish. Like, those two things don't usually happen. Yeah, that was like, wow, so he obviously did it.
For sure.
And then awkwardly, Russell was like, do you want to take a minute with your son? Which she, like, seemed like, oh, yeah, I should do that. That's what mothers do. Later, Russell brings him to the house and runs it down for Simone. And then when she asks to see her alone, Gary freaks the fuck out. And he's like, oh, you're not going to talk to her by yourself. And then Russell basically says, I'm going to take her into the room. And if you get back up, they're going to put you into a different room. And Simone kind of gives a look like, I'll beat your ass, bro.
And he's doing that. He's doing that controlling thing where he can't let her out of his sight. You know what I mean? Like, he can't let her go anywhere.
He then says the phrase, what kind of Hitlers you got working here, which proves his intelligence.
That's a jump. Such a weird jump.
It's also like, what kind of Nazis do you have working here? Like, instead of...
yeah, like, Hitler was one dude. Hitler was one guy, but he... Yeah, I get what you're saying.
He's like a dude who invokes Hitler's name on Reddit.
But who probably secretly is, like, really down with Hitler.
Secretly.
That too close to home, or what?
No, just secretly down with Hitler is a funny phrase. Secretly down with Hitler. Just makes me picture Hitler with, like, a sideways baseball cap. Russell gets Linda alone and is basically like, what do you do for work? He's like, oh, bartender, but gonna have to stop because it looks bad if you're pregnant serving drinks.
Yeah, no shit.
She also just casually mentions, like, oh, yeah, he's a hitter. He hits people. And Russell's like, does he hit you? And she's like, yeah, I don't have a victim-y thing about it. And she says, I've been hit all my life. And I was like, damn, that's way more depressing than any other part of this situation where it's like, yeah, I've been hit, but I don't have a victim-y thing about it.
But she doesn't know, but like her saying that is a victim-y thing.
Yeah, it's very disgusting and sad. It's also, she then goes on to be like, oh, he could have done this. I didn't see it, but he could have killed Josh. But he always made it up to by, like, buying a toy. And she then justifies it by saying, well, Josh was no bundle of joy. And it's like, yeah, my kid was a real piece of shit.
I was just gonna say that.
Like, just the idea of a mother being like, look, my kid was a real asshole. So,
like, look, this dude may have beat the fuck out of my kid, but my 13-year-old, 12-year-old, 11-year-old deserved it.
Because you know what? Well, yeah, this 6-year-old, you want to know why they were a piece of shit? Because they were crying about having nightmares and putting boogers on the sofa. What a dick.
And they're probably crying about nightmares because your husband was beating the fuck out of them.
And school kids didn't like him either. Nobody liked this kid. He just wouldn't be right. She, like, just straight-faced being like, yeah, I didn't see it.
No idea what happened.
No idea what happened. And then she's like, do you believe it happened the way he said it did? I only heard what he said, but he does lie. Like, she just ends the interrogation was like, yeah, he's a liar.
So far, like, I think he checks all of her boxes on her, like, perfect guy list.
Russell then goes at Gary and looks at his ring before talking to him and says, so are we going to get serious about what happened here? Because I think you punched him in the face and he fell off the fire escape. And he's like, no, I just wanted some alone time with Linda and tried to get him outside. And he's like, yeah, don't you hate it when you're trying to fuck your pregnant wife and the kid that already lives there is just getting in the way?
Yeah, that's such a weird, I don't know, it's very weird to me. Yeah, just to be, like, so pissed off. I mean, granted, like, the kid's not his blood, quote-unquote, but, like, still, it's still pretty crazy.
So you're saying that if a kid was bothering you and you're trying to get fresh with Maria, you just punch him off a fire escape?
No.
I don't know, Kyle. I don't know, Kyle, it sounds like you're advocating punching 6-year-olds.
I mean, sometimes...
sometimes, if the kid's no bundle of joy...
Sometimes a 6-year-old won't shut up.
Look, I've punched a 10-year-old for putting boogers on my couch.
Well, I mean, I'd be a hypocrite, because I still put boogers on my couch, so...
what's good for the goose? With Gary, she's like, so okay. You definitely punched him in the head because there's an indent in his skull from your fucking ring, you dumbass.
Yeah, then she drops, like, this hammer. This wah-wah-wah.
And he's like, okay, I did punch him, and he fell down the stairs. And she's like, but I didn't mean to kill him. He's like, cool, so that brings it down from murder to manslaughter. Fantastic. She's like, write it up. And he's like, I can't go to jail. If I go to jail, my life is over. And he's like, hey, you know, that's funny, because you know whose life's actually over? The six-year-old that you killed. Oh, man.
Literally smacked in the head.
After that, Russell talks to Linda alone. Because, you know, Russell's all twisted up because she is pregnant. She's about to have herself a kid.
And she was a victim of
abuse.
A fucked up home, too.
And she says, you know, Gary admitted to it, especially after the ring indent in the kid's head. And she's like, he never even went to college. He just bought it out of a catalog.
Isn't that weird?
That's very weird. I don't know why you would do that.
Yeah, like, it's also weird. To me, it's a weird, like, story and plot point that has no, like, payoff. Like, why even bring that up if, like, that's not even talked about?
Yeah, it's just to prove that Gary's an asshole. Russell then turns around and is like, can I ask you a personal question, Linda? Do you like kids? And she goes like, yeah, I guess. And then she's like, well, what about this baby that you're about to have? He's like, well, Gary was really interested in having this baby. He's like, yeah, well, Gary's going to jail.
Does she say it like that? Does she say it like she's talking to, like, a fucking, like, she's like, hey, dummy, Gary's going to jail.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't talk like a fucking, like, school bully. She then says, well, I guess this one's mine to deal with. Which, you know, they don't want to be a mom if that's their way of referring to a child.
Always the best way to start out, like, having a child is what, if I have to deal with it.
And then, after she says, like, well, have you considered your options? And at one point she's like, are you saying I'm not a fit mother? And it's like, no, just the world is saying that in response to the things you're doing and saying. And she openly admits to not having any feelings for Josh. She thought that after Josh was born, she would suddenly become a mother type, and she wasn't.
She didn't care.
She also mentions, like, well, I'm not having one of those late-term abortions. You have to go into labor just to have the thing. And I was like, you know, I'm not a... This is where it got a little weird. Like, I'm not an anti-abortion nut, but I think there is sort of a callousness in the phrasing of, like, look, if I'm going to be hurt anyway, there's no reason to murder the thing. And it's like, okay. Oddly, weirdly selfish and strange to say it like that. Like,
it is. It's very weird.
To just be like, I don't want to have to go into labor and then not get a living, breathing thing out of it.
But yeah, but I'd rather go into labor and get a living, breathing thing out of it that I don't even like.
Yeah, and then treat it like shit. She then's like, you must think bad of me. Don't think so bad of me, and starts crying. And it's like, she showed more emotion that a person thinks she's a bad mother than the actual death of her child.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you shouldn't be a mom. You should look into adoption. And, I mean, that's the end for her. The only thing, we have a little thing at the end with Russell and Simone, but we have a whole nother story to do, which we're going to do quick because we're already at about an hour.
Oh my god, which one's this one?
You don't even remember that this happened? Kirkendall and Medavoy get a dead man at a taxi service.
Right. They're working together.
Essentially, at a taxi service, there was a shooting, and the dispatcher was dead. And there was a blood trail. There was a blood trailer. There was not a blood trailer. There was nobody giving blood at this crime scene. There was a blood trail leaving the car service, and everybody was saying just a guy came in and shot Ricky and then left. And that it was a Puerto Rican guy with a yin-yang tattoo. Not tattoo. Yin-yang earring.
Yin-yang earrings. The black and white ones.
And, you know, they have a little talk like maybe Ricky, who was shot, came to the door and then came back to try and explain why there's a blood trail leaving the establishment. When they come back to the house, Fancy goes up to Kirkendall and Medavoy and says that someone fits their description is in Bellevue with a gunshot wound. I wanted to mention that Medavoy says maybe it's a grounder, which is like, yeah, everything's baseball and snappy comebacks. They go to meet with Rico Perez, And while they're in the hospital, they remind everybody that Martinez is still hurt with a back injury and laid up next to Gina, who's dealing with her pregnancy, to explain why they're not there right now. And Rico Perez... I also wrote here in the notes, it's just a reminder that he hurt his back while fucking Gina when she was pregnant.
Yep.
Because if you remember from last episode, Metavoid decided to tell the entire office.
Yeah, that's fucking right. What was he calling it? Domestic issues or domestic problem?
What he said was, Metavoid told... Martinez told him it was domestic issues. And then when everybody stared at Metavoy after he said domestic issues, he's like, well, you know, Gina's further along in her pregnancy, and he got into an unfamiliar connubial position. Because he didn't want to say, you know, he was fucking her weird, and he threw out his back.
It's weird, because, like, Metavoy has the vocabulary of someone who should be, like, really smart, but then, like, he's such an idiot.
When they go to talk to Rico Perez, he's also a famous face. Rico Perez, I think, was the same guy in NYPD Blue that Metavoy smacked when one character called his lesbian baby mama the D word. I don't know if you remember that episode.
His character's name's Rico Perez?
Yeah, the character's name is Rico Perez. That episode that had Michael Pena, they go to see that guy, and Metavoy hits this one dude in the back of the head. I think this is the same guy. He just doesn't have his dreads anymore.
That's what I'm trying to look at right now.
Basically, he's drunk and saying he's not saying nothing, because that's how you get put in jail, because they'll come up with something to put him in jail. So he's just not talking. But he has a gunshot wound, which doesn't make sense, because they were told that Ricky did not have a gun. He would not be allowed to have a gun, so who shot him? And they tell the cop to bring him to the station house once he gets done there. Basically, the next day, Ricky shows up. No, Ricky's, I think, mom and uncle shows up. Because I think they mentioned that it wasn't his dad. When they show up, the guy playing his uncle is Al White? I think I wrote his name down right. And Al White is a famous face. He was the black father in Back to the Future 2 that almost killed Marty McFly with a baseball bat.
Oh, yeah, when he comes in the bedroom?
Yep. He was also one of the black dudes in Airplane speaking jive.
Really?
Yeah, so pretty famous face. They basically come in and they say, that Puerto Rican man didn't shoot Ricky. The man who did came and confessed to Darlene and asked for forgiveness.
Right, like he went to church.
What I love is the mom was like, look, I've forgiven him, and... I understand what happened, but I don't want to turn him in, so could you just let this other guy go?
Kind of crazy.
And they say, you know, you coming in with information, but not saying who, you basically shouldn't have come in at all.
Yeah, but she basically came in and was like, let's just drop everything. Like, my son's dead, we're all good, like, I don't need you guys anymore, bye.
It's also, we skipped the scene, but also the two dudes that were in the dispatch office pointed out the Puerto Rican guy. This is the scene where Willie is in the cage, and he's just looking, like, with a hand making a drinking motion.
He's looking for a Coke.
Both of them picked out that guy, and the second guy's like, did the other dude pick him out too? And he's like, yeah, we got that guy, and then, like, hits his hand with his fist. The uncle is the one that's like, I personally think he should be charged.
The uncle gives no fucks. I can't remember that. Uncle's like straight up like, I only brought her in because she asked. And like, I'm respecting her and everything. But in the end, like, this motherfucker should be gone.
And the uncle says, it's Jeb Taylor. It's his best friend since diapers. He accidentally killed Ricky trying to protect him from the Puerto Rican man. And you could find him at the First Baptist Church. So they bring in Jeb after bringing him in from church, and he's like, look, man, there's no need for police involvement. I've asked for forgiveness of the parents and God, and you guys are the outsiders.
And they said, cool, man. I said to them, my bad, and they said, no problem.
But I just love the idea. It's like, look, man, I squared it up. We're all good.
I killed her son. No probs.
And he's like, he says, I stepped into a situation and needed the good Lord, and I accidentally shot my brother Ricky, but he has granted me mercy and I have found peace. And it's like, okay, that's great, but if you've just admitted it to us, like, we're not gonna not charge you, dog.
Yeah, that's, yeah, if you just admitted to us, that's a murder.
What's that rapper?
That's one of them murders.
What was that rapper that used to do that? Murder! Who was that?
Was
that?
Was it Ja Rule?
Might be Ja Rule. The Firefest guy?
Huh?
The Firefest guy?
Yeah.
You know, he confessed, and you know, God's on his side, and he'll be fine, I guess. The end of the episode has two important scenes. In the middle of this episode, Simone kind of has a moment with Russell where he just reminds the audience he's concerned because she went to Bellevue alone, and she says the phrase, I go to the bathroom too by myself, Bobby.
I mean, if she's going to the hospital, I can understand him being a little concerned about that. Like, he has the right to be worried about that.
It's definitely different than kicking down a door and shooting at people while you're pregnant, but
100% different.
Towards the end, Jill is in the bathroom changing, and Russell's like, look at you. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to my son's play. I'm like, yeah, you're going to your son's play hunting for some dad dick.
Oh, for sure. I mean, she says it at the end. She's like, oh, there's a dad there I kind of like, or I think is cute, or whatever.
Yeah, she is going dad dick hunting. It's like a red dress that's like, you know, it's one of those red dresses. You don't wear it to your kid's play.
You don't want to be that, Mom.
Did she say, I think one of her son's names is Kyle. I can't remember her son's name, but it'd be like, yo, dude, is that your mom? Like, well, because I don't know
I think one of her kid's name is Kyle.
Just be like, hey, Kyle, is that your mom? They're giving us our first prepubescent boners here. Because, god damn, that was so funny. And while Jill is looking like a sex pot, she's like, so, Russell, I know you're pregnant. I can spot a pregnant woman a mile away, which is a weird thing to say. And basically says, I'll be here for advice, and I'm happy for both of you. And then goes out hunting for some dad dick.
Yeah, dude. I mean, to each their own. You can dress however you want to dress, be however you want to be, but, like, I don't know, because they're both boys, when those boys are in high school, their friends are going to be, like, jerking off to their mom, dude. nobody wants that.
I don't know, maybe it was just the tone in your voice, the way you said it was so funny. Just gonna be jerking off to your mom, dude.
Yeah, like, I don't know what to say, but like, it's gonna happen, dude.
I just like the idea that like they go through a photo album and then they're like, oh, Kyle's play, and then they see a picture of their mom and be like, shit, Mom! Like, what were you doing? She's like, oh, I was trying to get after Billy's dad. He's like, of course. That's why Billy's dad was all up on your business. Like, the very end of the episode, Simone asks Russell how she's feeling, then mentions about, you know, Willie, the dude who killed his brother and sister. And then Russell's like, oh, by the way, Jill knows. And she figured it out. And he's like, okay, that's fine with me. And then it ends with them weirdly asking, like, do you want to buy a crib this weekend?
Yeah, was this, like...
With a mobile?
he has that weird, like, mobile fixation. But, like, is this, like, the scene that's supposed to, like, show us that they're, like, moving on and ready to start this kid?
I guess so. You want to buy...
I still don't feel like they're going to be good parents together. I don't know why. I don't know why. Like, just the way it's all started, like, it just doesn't feel good.
It just doesn't feel good.
Like, I mean, I know, like, maybe I'm going out on a limb here, but sometimes Bobby displays characteristics like that dad who...
Killed the kid?
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying, like, Bobby would ever, like, hit a child or hit his wife, but, like, sometimes he gets pretty, like, overprotective. And it borderlines on, like... like being like, yo, whoa, just like take a breath, dude.
And well, the reason Bobby's overprotective is like he lost his wife to something he had no control over. So like, I would imagine everything that he can do to protect the people he loves, he's gonna do.
Like her going through the door, like you put that baby in her, like you had control over that. Like you just, like, deal with it now.
You put that baby in her with your Simone sperm.
Did you not think trying to have a child with a cop was gonna be like difficult? Like, I don't know.
That's the part of this that like seems irresponsible to me, is that they're both cops. They're both not mentioning that they're together and with child. So at no point are they going to make adjustments to make sure that they, one of them is at least going to be safe. Well, I mean, right now it'll be Diane, but when the kid comes out.
Sorry. And I've said this before, like what they're doing is like a perfect example of why they don't let people in the same department like have children or like be together, like, and get married, like everything. There's like, and it keeps showing us why that rule's in place and why it's a pretty like chill rule to follow. I don't know, it's just interesting.
But I mean, this department or this squad is basically the fucking squad. Everybody's banging somebody in the department in some way, shape, or form.
The squad.
Alright. Anything left to say about this episode? Besides...
I really wish they would have cut one of the stories out and focused more on the Willie story, for sure. Because
yeah,
I feel
absolutely.
Like you could have, like... You could have expanded on a lot of things more. I don't know.
It also... It just would have been,
like, maybe
fun.
Have, like, another sister who, like, isn't really, like, a part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like... But, like, can help give, like, a little bit of info about, like, Willie's brother, you know. I don't know, like, just to open the story up more. I don't know, because I feel like that family could have been super interesting. Or, like, that guy, like, you could have made that family a little bit more interesting, a little bit more weirder, if you opened it up a little bit more.
Yeah, especially with, like, the mom was relegated to screaming, "I've soiled myself!" Like, just repeatedly. Yeah. When it's like, okay, well, we could have talked to her a little bit more. Could have expanded with Wendy's friend a little bit.
I mean, it's supposed to represent that she's literally just been, like, laying in bed for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was murdered a week ago, and you know that Willie hasn't been taking care of his mom, so she's been, you know what I mean? So...
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. It would have been nice to have a little more Willie in the story, a little less everything else.
Hey, Kirk, take your personal decisions elsewhere, okay? Maybe you'd like a little more Willy, but I don't.
I want my NYPD Blue to be like Game of Thrones. More flaccid dick. Anyway, NYPD Blue Balls is available on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, where you find a podcast, Spotify, things like that. We're on Instagram at AstroBrothersPodcast, on Twitter at AstroBrosPod. Where we're talking about the show. Mostly it's just announcement for when new episodes come out. And have yourself a good one. Be safe. And keep watching NYPD Blue. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It helps us get seen in the algorithm, and then more people may listen to the podcast, but more importantly, watch NYPD Blue. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there, What Would Sipowicz Do?, a couple of articles written about the show, ranging in topic. Then there's True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. And then there's an unofficial guide to NYPD Blue by Gene Kendall, going through the entire series, kind of like we are. If you have nothing to do Monday mornings, Wednesday nights, or Friday nights, I have a stream on Twitch, twitch.com/KirkHasGlasses. I'm usually watching public domain movies or just hanging out. You can catch me there to enjoy some other kind of entertainment. Other than that, stay safe and keep watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue.